In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about truths, dares, and vengeance in our discussion of One of Us is Next by Karen M. McManus. Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire. And today we are going to discuss One of Us is Next by Karen M. McManus.
Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Hooray!
Hey! This one's very spoilery. I feel like I feel bad when we cover a mystery book. Do you feel that way? Like, hey, let's ruin everything!
Yes and no. Because I don't want to spoil a good mystery for people. I really don't. But we disclaim it everywhere.
That's,
you know?
True. That's true.
The whole premise of this podcast is that we are filling you to the brim with spoilers.
Yes.
And if you don't want spoilers, then you skip the episode.
But
and come back.
Yeah, but don't skip.
After you've listened.
Yeah, don't skip.
Or read.
Don't skip the episode.
No, it's really, really good. At the same time, though, I mean, some people don't need to have something necessarily... It doesn't spoil them, even if they know the whodunits and what and where's and whatever. Because it's the journey, not the destination. They like to see the twists and see things plucked out.
Yeah, I feel like, especially with this one, Our summary is the story minus all the red herrings. So it went from like an 80-page summary with all of the red herrings and every single tiny bit of detail thrown in. And now it's like 10 pages because
we can cut it out.
We took out all of the unimportant stuff. The stuff that doesn't matter to the story at all, but is just thrown in to confuse the reader.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
but that's the thing.
Don't need that.
That's the thing. And you know when you write the summaries for murder mysteries yourselves, that if it's the first time you've read it and you're summarising at the same time, you have to put it all in. Because it's not until the end that all the little bits and pieces make sense.
Yeah.
That's when you can go back and you can chop things out and then realise actually there's only about four things that point to the bad guy, and it's very obvious when you realise what those four things are.
Yes. It's good that we work as a team because...
Oh, God, yeah.
You can write the summary and then I can go back so you don't have to deal with it anymore and pull out all the garbage that's unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do know we've got a couple of other mysteries coming up on our schedule as well.
So we have to team up. We're a super team.
We just have to team up. Exactly. Exactly. I am interested to do one where it's a dual voice, a dual narration. And one person would narrate one voice and the other person would summarise one point of view. And the other one would summarise from the other person's and see what happened.
That could be interesting. You know what would be even better is if we only read that person's point of view and didn't know the rest of the story. And then we spoiled each other at the same time.
We need to do this.
All right. Quest. We will do it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway.
Anywho. We have a book to discuss.
We do.
To spoil.
Yes, we do. So I've got some background information that I found on publiclibrariesonline.org. There's an interview between Brendan Dowling and Karen M. McManus. And she's asked, Maeve is at the center of the novel and was also in One of Us is Lying. What was it about Maeve that made you want to revisit this character and explore her more deeply in One of Us is Next? And she responds, I always thought that Maeve had main character potential. The sisterly chemistry between her and Bronwyn was really fun. There was a lot of her story that I didn't have room to explore in terms of the childhood illness that she suffered and how that shaped her worldview. Also, the way she had allowed herself to be protected by Bronwyn in a lot of ways. That was something she was starting to move away from at the end of the first book, and it seemed that there was a lot to explore there.
I would agree.
And I will say, edit this out me, probably should have just done a Maeve short story because, eesh.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about that right now.
No, it was the biggest red herring. The fish was slapping me in the face. Yeah. But I knew it was a red herring from the outset.
Yeah. So, what are your initial
thoughts?
Back
in the room.
Yeah, what are your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts, I'm looking forward, like, before I read the book, I was looking forward to getting back into the Bayview High world a little bit, as much of a travesty it really is. Like, high school is nothing like the secondary school I went to. I mean, it was god-awful and bullying and just, I needed to get out of there. I did not enjoy my school experience.
But there weren't just lots of murders all the time?
There wasn't lots of murders all the time. We didn't have social media.
Oh, do you remember
mobile phones? When I was at secondary school, we didn't have mobile phones. But also, the thing is, I can't really compare it to secondary school. I have to compare it to college for me because of the age.
Yeah.
And I did eventually get a mobile phone, a nice big Nokia brick that had original Snake on. It was a wonderful phone.
Yeah, I had that same phone.
Everybody had that. If you didn't have that phone, you didn't have a phone. You didn't have a proper mobile. Club was the one to death. It was great. why was I saying? I was looking forward to getting back into the Bayview High because it's just such a foreign world to me. I am a woman of a certain age now. That makes me sound really super old. I feel super old. I don't remember that kind of high school gossipy bitchiness. So it's quite fun to read about it a little bit. But also I knew Maeve was going to be a lead character and I did enjoy her character in the first one.
Yeah.
So I thought that was going to be interesting. And also revisit the characters somewhat. But my main draw was wondering what Karen M. McManus was going to do next with the same setting.
Yeah.
And similar, if not the same, characters. How was she going to twist this one?
Yeah, I was really excited when I learned that the Bayview Four would be making a comeback because I enjoyed learning about them and like, hey, what are they up to now? They're out of high school. What are they doing? Why are they back in town? What is going on? So I was excited to read
about
that.
Yeah, it's nice to have a revisit of characters, good characters, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's funny that your teenage school experience did not include rumor mongering because that was definitely my high school.
Oh, it did. It did. But not to the degree that it's perpetuated in media for high, like for American high schools. And I think it's to do with the size. Like when I see high schools in America, they look flippin' huge.
Yeah. A lot of them are. But, you know, there's also the tiny schools. There's also tiny, tiny, tiny schools where there's three people in your graduating class.
Oh, my God. You'd get shipped off for, like, the town 30 miles away in this country if that was the case. Wouldn't be funding. Yeah, I don't know. It's just it's a comparison, isn't it? It's just, it's completely different. It's completely unfamiliar. But there's elements that I can draw from.
Yeah, it was not unfamiliar to me, except for all of the social media business. It felt like high school.
Yeah. So glad I didn't have social media when I was at school.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have been bothered. I probably wouldn't have bothered with it. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Hard to think that way, though.
Yeah.
Like it's hard the to imagine is, though, a time without social media.
It really is.
Okay. Should we finally start? I feel like this is going to take 8 days.
Oh, well, it will, but you can probably cut out most of what I've said already.
Okay, let's begin. Friday, March 6th. A reporter is interviewing two girls outside Bayview High School. There has been another death, reminding everyone of Simon Kelleher, the student who, in a bizarre form of revenge, tried to frame four of his classmates, Bronwyn, Cooper, Addie, and Nate, for his own murder, which was actually a suicide. One girl is deeply upset and worried that the school is cursed. The other is stoic and wonders if she should really be talking to the reporter at all. 10 weeks earlier, on a Reddit subforum, Vengeance is Mine, user Bayview2020 connects with user Darkest Mind. They both knew Simon Kelleher and have a lot in common.
Monday, February 17th. Maeve is sitting at her usual table at Café Contigo. Her phone keeps going off with texts from her sister Bronwyn with college suggestions. Still, the junior in Bayview High, Maeve isn't ready to make that kind of decision. Unlike her sister, who had her Yale applications filled out in kindergarten, with Maeve... Crayon.
Wow, she would do it too.
She really would. With Maeve is Knox Myers, her friend and former boyfriend. They mutually decide to break up when they realise they really weren't romantically compatible. Addie is bustling about waiting tables, trying to get everyone served before Cal State Fullerton's baseball season opener begins, with Cooper debuting as starting pitcher.
Oh, Cooper. Good job, Cooper.
Is starting the pitcher a good thing?
Yeah, it is.
Nate comes in and sits with Maeve. Even though his relationship with Bronwyn is on again, off again, he has turned into a brother figure for Maeve. With them is Luis, Cooper's best friend and Maeve's current crush, whose family owns the cafe, and Phoebe, Maeve and Knox's classmate and part-time Café Contigo waitress. We're all watching the game and Cooper is spectacular, but ultimately his team loses. Boo!
Boo indeed!
Maeve tries not to see the loss as a sign of bad luck, but ultimately spends the evening thinking of her childhood leukemia and of Simon Keller. He's a memory most would like to forget. However, his death and failed revenge plans forge strong friendships within the Bayview Four, and now they're all moving on with their lives.
Are they, though? Are they?
To some degree.
Tuesday, February 18th. After her father passed away, Phoebe, her mom, younger brother Owen, and older sister Emma moved to a small apartment. The apartment is tiny, and though they are physically closer together, as a family, they've never been further apart. Owen lives in his video games, and Emma throws herself into tutoring. Where once Phoebe and Emma could read each other's minds like twins, now they're pretty much polite strangers. Emma drives Phoebe and her annoying friend Jules to school. And we all hate Jules already. Jules is crushing on Nate. And would
Stop.
Love to be there for him in his latest breakup with Bronwyn. And again, we all hate her guts out. Stop it. Stop it. As they pull into the school parking lot, Phoebe gets a text to meet someone at the bleachers. Dashing away from Emma and Jules, Phoebe meets up with Brandon, the hot superstar quarterback. He might be good on the field and fun to make out with, but... in Phoebe's own words, he's basically an asshole. They're getting handsy when they both get a text from an unknown number. Still missing about that? I know I am. Let's play a game. With a link. Brandon checks out the link. It's rules to a game of truth or dare. One person at a time will get a truth or dare text and will have 24 hours to reply. Pick dare and a challenge will be issued. Pick truth and one of their secrets will be revealed. As Phoebe and Brandon start making out again, Phoebe gets another text. Phoebe Lawton, you're up first. Text back your choice. Should I reveal a truth, or will you take a dare?
Ooh,
ooh, menacing.
Wednesday, February 19th. Heading from the mall and cutting through a construction site, Knox is on his way to his internship at Until Proven, the law office that helped Nate last year when he was falsely accused of Simon's murder. The office is busy with people at every desk. folders piled so high people can hide behind them, including Eli Kleinfelter. Knox idolises Eli and wants to learn his ways. He seems to have everything. Good looks, good job, good woman, respect, intelligence, the works. But Eli doesn't even know his name. Oh, womp womp. Between tasks, Knox checks his phone. It's going crazy with group messages from his four older sisters. After a little while, it stops. Then one message pops up from an unknown number. Tsk, no response from our first player. That means you forfeit. I expected better from you, Phoebe Lawton. No fun at all. Now I get to reveal one of your secrets. In true about that style. Knox waits in anticipation. Phoebe is an open book. She's a social butterfly. Everyone likes her. What could she have to hide? Another message pops up, revealing that Phoebe slept with her sister's boyfriend. What? Ooh. Knox is dumbfounded. He didn't even know that Emma has a boyfriend. I didn't think that Phoebe would do something like that. Another message suggests that in the future, you should choose Dare.
Yikes. Thursday, February 20th. Maeve is dwelling on the texts about Phoebe. They've never been friends, but they know each other from the cafe. Maeve even has her number and thought about texting her to see if she was okay, but then thought that felt too nosy. Speaking of nosy, Maeve feels something dripping from her nose. It's blood. She rushes to the bathroom as cold dread fills her. Leukemia relapses always start with a nosebleed. She can't do this again, so she heads to school, determined to ignore it and not tell anyone about it. Not even her parents. That's a bad idea. Don't do that. The school is buzzing about Phoebe's truth. At lunch, Phoebe and Jules are sitting together, and Emma is nowhere to be seen. But that isn't necessarily unusual. Knox sits next to Maeve at her table. He can't get his head around Emma having a boyfriend in the first place. One of Brandon's friends, Sean, also an asshole, tries to stir up trouble, saying he wouldn't mind if Brandon shared Jules with him, or even if they doubled up. Then he calls her a whore, but she just insults him right back. Maeve doesn't like what she's seeing and stands up for Phoebe. Then Sean is sent to the principal's office. Phoebe stops by Maeve's table on the way out. Lucy, a girl at Maeve's table, says she's going to tell Principal Gupta about the cell phone game, which would prompt her into instigating her no cell phones in school policy. Phoebe stops by the table and tells Lucy, "Don't you dare."
Inside their tiny apartment, Phoebe is helping Owen prepare for the school spelling bee. Normally, she wouldn't bother, but guilt over Emma and realizing Owen isn't frozen at age 9 when their dad died spurred her to help him. Phoebe hasn't seen Emma since the truth was revealed. She's been ignoring her texts and sleeping at a friend's house. However, as Phoebe and Owen discuss the spelling and meaning of bizarre and buzzer, Emma comes home and she looks awful. Sensibly, Owen goes to his room. Emma asks why Phoebe slept with Derek, a boy she met at Model UN over the summer and who dumped her when school started again. But Phoebe doesn't have a good answer. She was drunk, yes, but alcohol doesn't control her actions. She's hurt about the rift between her and Emma after their father's death, and sleeping with Derek didn't help. Emma blows up. Derek was her first and only. He was special. Phoebe has had a few sexual partners, viewing sex as a natural extension of a relationship if it feels right. Emma never wants to speak to Phoebe or Derek again, and then storms into their shared room. Phoebe leaves the apartment. Sitting in the park alone, Phoebe scrolls through her missed messages. Jules checked in, so did Maeve, which is a first. Brandon wants to hook up. So she deletes that text and his number. The jerk. Good for her. There's another message from Unknown too. The game is still on. As hurt as Phoebe is, she understands the pull of about that and this game of truth and dare. You can't help being curious.
Can you, though?
If you're a cat, no.
True. Saturday, February 22nd. Down in his basement, Knox is playing video games with his oldest sister, Kirsten. Deciding to break for lunch after a pretty graphic kill, they head to Wing Zone, a chicken wing hotspot with an inflatable chicken mascot on the roof, which snooty locals love to complain about. On the way up, they run into their dad, who is hiring more until proven exonerees since Nate is working out so wonderfully. Knox is jealous of the esteem his dad has of Nate, but it's not Nate's fault that he just isn't the type of boy his dad likes or relates to. On the drive over to Wing Zone, Knox checks his phone, waiting to see if a message from Unknown has come through. Nothing. As much as he shouldn't care, he anticipates the next round of Truth or Dare. At Wing Zone, there is an unusually large crowd outside. Someone has stuck the Bayview High Wildcat mascot's head on the head of the Wing Zone chicken. Matthias, the loner goth kid from school, is there and points out to Knox in not very subtle tones that someone was dared, wink wink, to do it. Suddenly, Knox's phone is alive with messages. Unknown is congratulating Sean Murdoch on a dare well done. Sean is an asshole bully, and Knox hates that he's getting all these accolades from their peers for a stupid dare. That's a pretty good dare.
It was.
Not at all as terrible as that truth that was revealed.
No, no. It certainly sets a tone for the dares, doesn't it?
It really, really does. Just do them. Just do the dares.
Just do the dare. Thursday, February 27th. Bronwyn's back in town. Yay! And hanging out with Maeve at the cafe. Maeve isn't going to tell Bronwyn about her nosebleed or the second one, as it will ruin her visit. Maeve, man.
Come on, dude.
It'll be okay. Just don't think about it. Because that works.
Yeah, it does. It totally works.
They're talking about Nate and how Bronwyn still loves him, but thinks they are broken up for good this time. Sure, Bronwyn. That's what they all say.
Yeah.
Awkwardly, she heads to a Mathletes reunion with Evan, the guy she dated when she and Nate broke up for a little while last year. He wrote bad poetry and pined for her after they broke up. It was cringeworthy breakup. It was full of yikes, and we would not like to revisit that.
No.
After Bronwyn leaves, Maeve gets her laptop out and looks up Simon's old social media usernames. She finds his Vengeance is Mine forum has moved URLs, and a user called Darkest Mind has been talking with a user called Jellyfish. Just then, Luis comes in and sits with Maeve, and the flirting is strong with this one.
Yes, it is. Oh, yeah.
He even asks her about her boyfriend, Knox, but he's an ex, and he's just a friend. Luis raises an interested eyebrow at this information. His father calls him to work in the kitchen, and Maeve is about to go back to her laptop when Phoebe stops at her table. Maeve offers her a shoulder to cry on, or just something to do together, you know? Phoebe points out Luis likes her and she should do something about that. Maeve also shows Phoebe the Vengeance is Mine thread, but when Maeve refreshes the page, most of the thread is gone.
Ooh.
Only one post remains, and in it, Darkest Mind claims to be the one responsible for the new fans of Bayview High.
Friday, February 28th. Sitting alone in the room she and Emma share, Phoebe dwells on her mistake with Derek, her relationship with Emma, which she desperately wants back, and her dad. Phoebe texts Jules, hoping to make plans for that evening to have some normality. As she leaves their room, there's a knock at the door, which is strange, as no one had buzzed anyone in. After checking the peephole, Phoebe shoos Owen to his room and lets Brandon in. Brandon is an absolute asshole and tries to force himself on Phoebe, saying that it's his right and she should submit, and we all vomit in our mouths.
Hit that guy.
Yeah. Luckily, Phoebe's a good human being. So, slapping him and shouting for him to get out, Brandon leaves. That night, the cafe is heaving. Ashton's having a pre-bachelorette party with all her friends, including Cooper, so half the town has turned up to see him. Nate and Bronwyn are there and getting along very well again, though things start to cool when Evan turns up uninvited, and then Jules comes in, straddles Nate, and kisses the bejesus out of him. From the curtained entryway, someone snaps a picture, and as Jules leaves, she mouths to Phoebe, "Always take the dare."
Friday, March 6th. A reporter is interviewing Principal Gupta about the death of a student. The reporter wants to link the death to the reputation of gossip at Bayview High, but Principal Gupta states the school has changed and operates a zero gossip and bullying policy. It's a very different school from 18 months ago.
Yeah, totally. It totally 100% Sorry. Is. It's not true at
no,
all.
Not in any way, shape, or form.
No, not even a little bit. Monday, March 2nd. At the Until Proven office, Eli finally asks Knox his name after he shows some administrative initiative. Continuing about his intern work, grabbing coffee, ordering pizza, sorting death threat mail. Wait, what? Death threats? Yikes. Eli gets death threats regularly. There's even a folder for them, but this is the first Knox has ever opened. He's shaken, but more concerned for Eli. After his shift, Knox goes to the cafe to hang out with Maeve. When he gets there, he notices a large bruise on Maeve's arm, but she dismisses it and tells him about the new revenge forum she's found, which deletes posts after a few hours. She's going to monitor it, as she thinks it could be linked to Unknown's Truth or Dare game. As they are talking, Owen stops by for takeout and says hi. Maeve has gotten to know him a little since becoming friends with Phoebe. As Owen leaves, an intense-looking guy walks in and starts asking for Phoebe. The situation gets tense. Luis and his brother Manny come out of the kitchen, muscles rippling, and the guy leaves. Just then, Maeve gets a text. Probably Bronwyn. No. Maeve Rojas, you're up next. Text back your choice. Should I reveal a truth, or will you take a dare?
Dum, 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 dum.
You know, I thought that Maeve's truth was going to be leukemia. Wasn't. That is not what it was.
No, it really, really wasn't. Tuesday, March 3rd. The next day, Maeve is sitting in the cafe thinking about the text from Unknown and finding another bruise, another symptom of her leukemia returning. She tried to set up some tests with her doctor without her parents knowing, but as a minor, she needs their consent. Luis interrupts her for an outing, taking her to the Arboretum. They stroll along and Luis makes it very obvious he likes her, but Maeve mucks it up. Later that evening, with time to respond to Unknown nearly up, Maeve calls Knox. She wants to look into how someone would hide their number. She gets a ping from a notification service that there are new posts in the Vengeance's Mind forum. User Jellyfish has finally calmed down. Darkest Mind is very active, and their phrasing is near exact to Unknown's texts. 5 minutes left before her decision time is up, Knox asks her what she's going to do. Maeve doesn't want to play the game. I respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for yikes. But not yet. It's not yikes time yet.
No. And then it's going to be constant yikes, by the way.
Yes, it's about to be constant yikes, but right now it's barely any yikes. Phoebe is waiting for Emma at school so they can both head to Owen's spelling bee. A girl who is friends with bullies Sean and Brandon, Monica, points out to Phoebe an ad on the notice board. It's one for Emma's tutoring, but this one has been doctored, offering a threesome service and Phoebe's Instagram handle. Come on, jerk.
I see.
Phoebe is trying not to react when Emma reaches past, gives Monica a look, and tells her she's trash. Oh, no, sorry. She's in the way of the trash. Good one. Oh, zing. At the spelling bee, Phoebe checks her Instagram account. It's inundated with DMs and sleazy comments. She deletes them all, except the one from Derek, who wants to talk. Should have deleted that one, too. At home, There seems to be an easy truce, but when Owen comes in begging Phoebe to invite Knox over to play video games and mentions how Brandon came by, there's a misunderstanding about Brandon and Emma and Phoebe. Emma storms out. Owen is upset his family is so broken, and Phoebe doesn't know what to do. Suddenly, there's a text from Unknown. Maeve hasn't played the game, and a secret is revealed. This is bad. Phoebe tries to call Maeve, but can't get through.
Working late at Until Proven, and having left his phone in the copy room, Knox hasn't seen Maeve's truth. There are hundreds of texts, but before reading them, he returns Maeve's missed call. She's crying and full of apologies. Maeve said she only talked to one person, and that was Bronwyn, who wouldn't say anything, and there is context. What is it, Maeve? Maeve Rojas dumped Knox Myers because he can't get it up. Knox hangs up on her. He feels sick and shaken. Leaving Until Proven with a confused Eli in his wake, Knox texts Maeve back, telling her to go to hell.
Okay. I have an issue with this truth. That's not Maeve's truth.
It's not. And I have an issue with that same issue as well.
Poor Knox.
You're just putting her name at the front. Does not make it her truth.
Yeah, no. Wednesday, March 4th. School is not fun. Maeve is getting disgruntled comments from assholes like Sean, but Knox is taking the brunt of it with a defaced locker and offensive posters everywhere. He won't talk to Maeve, but she desperately wants to apologize. Phoebe tells her not to give Unknown attention anymore and block the number. She reaches for her phone to do just that. Later, sitting in the cafe, Maeve is distracted and doesn't realize it's closing time. Before Mr. Santos leaves, he offers to make her any dish she wants. However, Luis steps in to cook for her instead, but she has to help. The scallions and sexual tension are heating up. And they finally kiss! Yay! And then they're interrupted by dear brother Manny. Embarrassed about mauling Luis's face, Maeve runs out. And she didn't even get to eat dinner. Damn! That was going to be a good dinner, too.
Oh, you can smell it. Right? It's going to be amazing.
Most of the time when you say you can smell it, it's awful, but this time it's delicious.
I want to go to the cafe. Thursday, March 5th. Phoebe is having a good day. Emma is sick, so there's no awkwardness at breakfast, and she gets the car. Yay! She's looking cute in her favourite skirt and spending some time with Jules, who actually is an asshole, so that's actually not so great.
No, not great. Not great at all.
Phoebe sees all the posters and bullying Knox is dealing with and feels sorry for him. She hates the gendered double standards. She's slut-shamed for having sex, and he's shamed for not having sex. Yet Derek and Maeve seem to be fine. With a flash decision, Phoebe suggests she and Knox could health class last period and head to the mall for coffee. She tells him about Derek getting in touch, and generally they have a nice time. As they leave, they run into Jules and Monica. A few ugly comments and evil glances later, Phoebe heads to the car and cries for 15 minutes at the loss of her childhood friend. Knox heads to Until Proven, by the construction site shortcut again. On her way home, fire trucks and police cars fly past her.
Sitting with Addie and Phoebe, Maeve is helping construct favors for Ashton and Eli's wedding and getting advice about Luis. Both Addie and Phoebe think she needs to go for it. And she probably didn't maul his face. I mean, she did. She mauled his face.
He seemed to enjoy the mauling.
That's true. He did. But she really did. Ashton comes in with the mail, chats for a few minutes, and goes to get changed. Addie has received a brochure for a summer camp counselor position in South America teaching English to kids. She wants to look into teaching and thinks it will be a great opportunity. Plus, travel! She invites Maeve along, and Maeve really wants to go, but She's not sure if she'll make it. Ashton comes rushing back in, puts the TV on where the local news are reporting an accident at a construction site next to the mall. One teen injured. One dead. Ashton calls Eli, who confirms Knox is okay, but in the hospital. The boy who died is Brandon Weber. Phoebe faints. At the hospital, Knox is a mess. He's covered in bruises and cuts and has a concussion. On the news, Sean is saying that Brandon fell and he saved Knox, who was running after Brandon, by punching him in the face. Knox doesn't remember what happened, but knows that's not true. Face punches aren't for safety. Never. No.
I mean, I wasn't a Girl Guide or a Boy Scout, but I'm quite sure you did not get a merit badge for punching somebody in the face for safety.
No, I really don't think so.
Sunday, March 15th, a reporter interviews Brandon's father. He calls for accountability. There's always someone responsible. One day later, on the Reddit subforum Vengeance is Mine, Darkest Mind has started a thread. They are calling out Bayview 2020. Who is ghosting them? Darkest Mind threatens to let everything go up in flames just to watch them burn. Nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a good place to be. Safe, healthy. It's really great. Monday, March 16th. Emma and Phoebe have been giving Knox rides from school in the week since the accident. Knox is feeling better, but still looks beat up. Sean is acting like his best friend, which is disconcerting and confusing. Phoebe went to Brandon's funeral and didn't recognize the person described in the eulogy. On the way home from school, Phoebe asks Knox over to play video games with her brother. While he's off being owned by an 11-year-old, Phoebe goes into her and Emma's bedroom. Emma is sitting on her bed, laptop open, crying with a tumbler of water.
Mm-hmm.
Water. Emma insists it's only water. She never drinks, but she's definitely slurring her words a little bit. Owen kicks Knox's butt, but during one session, something triggers a memory for Knox. It's of Sean holding his phone, videoing something at the construction site, and he shouts at Knox for being there. Strange.
Tuesday, March 17th, Knox is bored and restless, so decides he's going to hang with Phoebe at the cafe while she's at work and get some of Santos's family's excellent food. Thankfully, Maeve has been avoiding the restaurant like the plague for some reason, and that's one conversation he does not have to deal with. Before heading out, he hears his parents talking. His dad is helping the investigation of the construction site. Can't figure out why the supports holding up the building would give. His mum makes some comments about not letting Brandon get away so lightly with what he did. They both infer Brandon has done some bad stuff and it's been hushed up. When he asks them, his mum shoots him down. At the cafe, Phoebe isn't working, but Sean is there for takeout.
Ugh. Fucking Sean.
He high-fives Knox and calls him my man. And it's just awful and uncomfortable, and he just needs to stop.
Please.
Just stop.
Please.
Knox tries to borrow Sean's phone to secretly see if there are any incriminating videos from the night of the accident, but no luck. As Knox is sitting at the counter, the intense guy who was asking for Phoebe earlier walks in, sits down, and scopes the place out for a while before leaving. Knox is once again left with an uneasy feeling that he's missing something.
At this point, you're not the only one. Thursday, March 19th. At Goodwin Field at Cal State Fullerton, Maeve is sitting with Chris, Cooper's boyfriend, and his nonny, watching Yay! Cooper pitch. Yay, nonny! Feeling a nosebleed coming on, she dashes to the bathrooms until it passes. On her way out, she spots Louise talking with Sean, Jules, and Monica, who is practically draping herself over him like a human cloak. And we all want her to die. When he sees Maeve, he comes over to talk, but she is jealous and angry after seeing him with Monica. He gets her number so he can send her some files to send to Knox. He says she can delete his number or whatever after, since she's acting so weird, and leaves her to head back into the stadium. As Maeve is standing there, her nose starts to bleed again. This time, Nate spots her, grabs her, and sits her down. He persuades her to finally tell her parents about her leukemia symptoms returning. She agrees. She tells him that he must get his head out of his ass and sort things out with Bronwyn, and he just laughs. He and Bronwyn are endgame. It might take a while, but they'll be together.
Friday, March 20th. Maeve has asked Phoebe and Knox to meet her at lunch. She had some stuff to deal with, so didn't get a chance until that morning to look at the files Louise sent her. They're from Sean's phone. Since he's actually friends with Sean instead of face punch friends with him, it was easy for him to get the videos that Knox failed to get earlier. They watch the video of Brandon standing in the construction site, ready to jump. Sean, Jules and Monica are cheering him on. Brandon complains that his dare isn't as good as theirs. Then he jumps and falls and doesn't make a sound.
Yikes.
The video shows the ground and Sean's, Jules and Monica sound frantic until Sean says, "What the fuck are you doing here, Myers?" before cutting out. It doesn't trigger any memories, but should they do something with that video? It only proves Sean, Jules and Monica are liars and reveals the truth or dare game, getting everyone in trouble. Maeve defers to their judgment and admits she's on her way to the doctors for tests. She might not be around much depending how things go, so it's really up to them. Phoebe leaves when it becomes obvious that Knox and Maeve need time to talk. On her way out, she spots Matthias, who has a message from Emma. She's sick and has taken the car home. So after school, Phoebe walks home and gets a phone call from her mom. Emma, who lost her phone over a week ago, can't be reached, and she was meant to do a restaurant walkthrough for Ashton and Eli's wedding rehearsal dinner. Where is she? Passed out drunk in bed after drinking half a tumbler of neat gin is where. What has made Emma spiral? Did she see the Instagram messages from Derek when she borrowed Phoebe's phone? In a drunken mumble, Emma asks if Phoebe loves him. Who? Derek? And then she says, "I didn't think he'd keep going," before passing out. Luga, Luga.
Another death threat has come in for Eli, and by the looks of the typography, it's the same person who sent the last one. Great! These death threats still shake Knox a little. He stays late to help Eli, as it's only 1 week until his wedding to Ashton, and he's always got so much work to do. On the way home, Knox stops by Nate's house to drop off his coat that he left at Until Proven when he was there earlier. When Knox goes into Nate's room, he finds him looking at photos from the construction site, trying to help Knox's dad piece things together. And you know who's in Nate's room? Stan! The actual lizard from book one! Yay! We love you!
Yay! Our favorite character from book one returns.
Yes! Oh, I'm so happy that he finally showed up. Anyway, there looks to be missing joists, but that can't be. The original construction company cut corners, but not to that degree, and the rubble doesn't match the deterioration. When Knox gets home, his dad is poring over the site blueprints. His dad makes some snide remarks about work ethic and sticking with things. This makes Knox mad, and he lashes out and accuses his dad of liking Nate more. It all boils over until his dad basically dismisses him. Knox heads up to his room, remembering something Nate said about the site. If you were totally paranoid, you'd almost think somebody messed with the landing. Totally paranoid!
Hello, that's me. Pleased to meet you.
Hi.
Monday, March 23rd. Knox has summoned Maeve and Phoebe for a secret meeting at lunch. He tells them his theory about the construction site, but is met with skepticism. Phoebe suggests waiting for the conclusion to the investigation. Maeve is just about to turn the ping me notifications for the discussion board back on when her phone rings. It's her oncologist with the results from her blood test. It's all clear.
Oh.
No leukemia.
Yay.
But her iron is low, causing the bruising and nosebleeds. So she's going to get a prescription for vitamins. As the lunch bell rings, she shoots off texts to her parents, also to Louise, apologising and asking to talk.
Whew.
Alas, communication.
Thursday, March 26th. On the way out of school, Phoebe stops by the bathroom and sees graffiti slandering her. Jules walks in, and her eyes flick to the graffiti, so she's probably the one who wrote it. Phoebe hasn't talked to Jules since seeing the video, and Phoebe makes some pointed comments about Sean missing Brandon, which he literally doesn't appear to at all. How could it have been any of them? Jules looks fairly vacant and pretty much agrees with everything Phoebe says, but snaps out in time for a bitchy comment. After school, Phoebe has her shift at the cafe, but it's slow, so Mr. Santos lets her leave early, which is fortunate as a stranger left a cryptic and aggressively direct note telling her to stop ghosting them and meet at the park at 5:30. Yikes.
That's
Knox?
not normal.
No. Mm-mm. Knox, Maeve, and Louise suggest it might be Derek, and they try to describe the intense guy who's been around at the cafe a few times. Then they all decide to go on a stakeout.
Stakeout party!
Stakeout party!
They turned up half an hour late to the stakeout because of traffic, but the guy is still there. From the car, no one can be totally sure if it's the intense guy, and Phoebe can't tell if it's Derek. Going incognito by borrowing Knox's hoodie, which smells really nice. She and Knox head to the children's play area to hide in the playhouse to get a better line of sight. This leaves Maeve and Louise alone for the first time since the kitchen face mall. Sure, they've texted, but not been alone. Maeve confesses she likes Louise and has for a while. Louise confesses the same. When the intense guy starts to leave, heading straight for them, Maeve grabs Louise, who is craning to see the guy better. And the traditional distraction makeout session begins. Yay! Phoebe catches them, knocking on the window and giving a cheery wave, which gives them enough time to set themselves straight before Knox climbs in the car too. Phoebe tells them it's definitely not Derek, and she has no idea who he is. They notice the intense guy getting into a car, so they tail him.
Knox and Maeve are sitting in his kitchen after hours of tailing. They have a license plate and registration, an address and a name, David Jackson. If they match to Intense Guy, remains to be seen. As they're searching Google and social media, Maeve gets a ping me notification. The Vengeance is Mine forum has a new post from Darkest Mind. Fuck you, Phoebe, for not showing up. Yeah, I used your name. We had a deal. Darkest Mind and Intense
Ooh.
Guy are one and the same. So he's also unknown? Did he arrange Brandon's death? Who is he? Knox tells Maeve about the conversation he overheard between his parents and Brandon getting off lightly about something. Well, Knox's parents are out, and his mom's laptop is just sitting there. As they try to locate potential files about Brandon, a car pulls into the drive. It's just Kirsten. While Knox distracts his sister, Maeve emails the potential Brandon files to herself.
Phoebe.
I felt like a New Year's Eve party. Oh no, there's a car in the drive. Put the body behind the furnace.
Oh my God. Quick, get the body. Oh shit, the body's gone. Not again.
Oh
Stop practical
no.
jokes.
Cliffhanger.
Oh God. Phoebe, meanwhile, is standing glaring at the working dishwasher. Horrible reminder that her dad was locked in a battle of wills with their old one that never worked. She checks her mom's liquor cabinet and finds the sole bottle gone. Emma must have it. Going to check on her and the probable mess she's made, Phoebe finds her sister unconscious and convulsing. Moving her to her side, Emma vomits everywhere. Her lips turn blue and her breathing's too shallow. Owen runs in at the noise. Phoebe shouts at him to call 911 and say it's alcohol poisoning. When the ambulance is on its way, Owen asks, "Who poisoned Emma?" This is a very good question.
Yes. She poisoned herself with alcohol. Friday, March 27th. Phoebe calls Maeve with an update on Emma. She's going to be fine, but there is talk of rehab. She's not awake yet to tell anyone what's happening with her. With all that going on, Maeve didn't want to put more pressure on Phoebe with the Darkest Mind posts, and she hasn't had time to get into Mrs. Meyer's files yet. On a brighter note, Bronwyn is home for Ashton and Eli's wedding. Yay! We love Bronwyn! She's mad that Maeve kept her possible relapse a secret, but gets over that quickly and says since Nate persuaded Maeve to tell her parents about her symptoms returning, she's been talking to him and watching movies with him on the phone every night. Oh,
That's
these
so
are my gold
cute.
times. I was kicking my feet just then. I felt that was a feet kicking moment.
I could tell. I could tell you were. On another stakeout, Maeve and Knox are sitting in a dingy coffee shop opposite the David Jackson house. Maeve has her laptop out and trying to open the files for Mrs. Myers. She finally gets one file open, but she's not sure if it's relevant. As the headline, Settlement on behalf of Eagle Granite Manufacturing Corporation, Eastland, California, pops up, Maeve decides to dig into her bag for a phone to show Knox a picture of the menacing note Intenskai left Phoebe. Knox realizes the typography is the same as the death threats Eli has been getting. Pulling up his Google Drive, Knox manages to get some data. Darkest Mind, aka Intenskai, aka Unknown, aka Death Threat Guy, is Jared Jackson, whose mother killed herself by accident with sleeping pills one Christmas, who was the son of David Jackson, now deceased, younger brother to Officer Ray Jackson, a policeman currently in jail awaiting trial for assisting in blackmailing and framing 17 innocent people of drug possession. Eli is prosecuting Sergeant DiAgostino, who is at the center of the blackmailing and framing scandal. Jared knew DiAgostino through a mentoring program and did so well he got a job at a local construction company. But what has that got to do with Phoebe? They try to call Eli, but he has his phone turned off so he can get married in peace. As they contemplate their next steps, Jared leaves the house and Maeve gets a ping me. A new post on Vengeance's mind from Darkest Mind says, TikTok, time's up. Guess I'll just fucking do it myself.
Yikes. Hurrying to Maeve's car, they tear off after Jared. Knox pulls out her laptop to check the documents Maeve was able to open. Wow, they are damning. Lance Weber, Brandon's dad, admitted that a few years ago on Bring Your Child to Work Day, his then 13-year-old son had been found on one of the machines for at least 5 minutes. Shortly after, Andrew Lawton, Phoebe's dad, was crushed by a slab of granite that fell from that exact same piece of machinery. Yikes! Knox thinks Phoebe may have been in on Brandon's death as revenge, but Maeve doesn't think so. Phoebe seemed genuinely shocked, and she had been hooking up with Brandon. Would someone be that bent on vengeance? Yes. Because Maeve has been having to drive like a NASCAR driver to keep up with Jared, she doesn't realize that they are outside the restaurant where Eli and Ashton are having their wedding rehearsal after party.
Why is no one picking up their damn phones? Knox and Maeve are sitting in the car watching Jared in his and getting understandably frustrated with people not conforming to Gen Z stereotypes. Jared suddenly gets out of his car and pulls a backpack on his shoulder. Knox climbs out of the car and starts recording him on his phone. Maeve follows. Jared goes down the side of the restaurant and throws the backpack under the wooden deck of the restaurant where the rehearsal dinner after party is happening. When he's gone, Knox tries to reach for the backpack, but he's too broad. So Maeve crawls under the deck and grabs it. Inside is metal and wires. It must be a bomb. Oh shit, it's a bomb!
Fucking bomb, Jesus Christ.
Luckily, the park is behind the restaurant, so Knox runs into it with the backpack. Maeve following behind the lunatic, and with the greatest throw he has ever done, flings the bag in the field. There's a commotion behind the bushes. Nate and Bronwyn were out for a stroll, but with no time to explain, they scream at them to run, just run. Just as they reach the restaurant and people are pouring out at the commotion, the bomb goes off.
Phoebe is at the hospital, having fallen asleep in her sister's room. Emma hasn't stirred. The nurse comes in, and Phoebe follows her out for some water, and decides to finally text Derek back. At the nurse's station, they are complaining about a full waiting room after the bomb explosion. Wait, what? Bomb? Jesus! The nurses explain what happened, and say that luckily only one boy was injured. Phoebe races downstairs to find that the waiting room is packed and the media are outside. Inside, she spots everyone but Eli, Ashton, Knox, and Nate. Addie explains what happened. Knox is with Eli, Ashton, and the police, and Nate basically acted like a shield and took a lot of shrapnel in his arm, keeping Bronwyn safe since they were closer to the explosion. As she is being told that the police caught the person responsible, Derek calls her back. He wants to be with her. They had something special. Blah, 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 blah. No one cares, dude. Phoebe can't believe it. No, they didn't have something special, and who did he talk to for all of this to come out? His answer stuns her. He told Emma the very next day that they slept together. As he's telling her this, Phoebe gets urgent texts from her mom to get to Emma's room. There's a detective who wants to ask her some questions. Jared Jackson told the police that he was working with Phoebe. She told him about their father's death and wanted vengeance against Brandon, and in return, she would help him with his revenge scheme. All of this is news to Phoebe, and she is stunned. Then someone speaks up, saying it was her. It's Emma. She was the one communicating with Jared, and she told him she was Phoebe because she was pissed about her sleeping with her boyfriend. But everything went way too far, and he wouldn't stop when she asked. They need a lawyer. Now,
yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, they needed a lawyer 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, thank you.
Saturday, March 28th. Eli and Ashton's wedding goes off perfectly. It's the antidote they all need. Phoebe couldn't go because of the ongoing investigation and Knox's concern for her, so he pops by with some wedding cake. Knox walks to Phoebe's. Her mother opens the door and he hands her a piece of paper with a list of good lawyers given to him by Eli. He can't be involved.
Obviously. Murder, death threats, bomb, yikes.
Yeah. And Phoebe's mom tells Knox Phoebe is on the roof terrace. Gah, you know, no. Knox hates heights, but he braves it for Phoebe. She's been crying and is racked with guilt and eats the cake while sobbing. She and Knox share a very hot and very heavy kiss, after which Knox is happy to report all systems are functioning. Wink. Oh, wink. And for the first time in days, Phoebe laughs. When he gets home, his dad is waiting up. He tells Knox he's proud of him and they hug it out.
It's pretty great. Pretty great day for Knox all around. His penis works.
And his daddy likes him.
Aw, yay. Wednesday, April 1st. It's the first day back at school, and Phoebe is dreading it. She's had some messages from Knox and Maeve. Then she bumps into Jules. They reach an understanding of sorts and admit they should have talked to and supported each other. That evening, Phoebe is sitting with Emma, their mom, and their lawyer, going over details of what exactly happened. Emma was upset after Derek told her about the hookup. Then she found paperwork about their dad's accident, which pushed her over the edge. Yes, she helped plan the game. She was going to get her vengeance first, and then they would move on to Jared's, but she didn't even know that it was about killing Eli. She only knew it had something to do with Jared's brother. Emma pretended she was Phoebe because she was so mad at her sister, thinking she didn't care at all about her. Emma asked Jared to stop after the first text. She deleted their text app, broke her phone, and never made contact with him after February 19th. This is problematic, as the messages between Phoebe and Jared don't stop there.
What? Really? What?
What? Shock? Ooh. What?
The lawyer shows Emma and Phoebe the text transcripts, and something makes alarm bells ring. The more bizarre, the better, right? Lol. Emma doesn't lol. No. Emma doesn't use double question marks. Emma didn't have a memorable moment of misspelling bizarre. Owen did.
Oh.
One person who sees and hears everything, who networked their phones and computers, who saw the divide in the family. Handing the transcript back, Emma tells her lawyer it is obviously a product of a delusioned mind, that Jared must have been using a dummy account to text himself, and nobody can prove anything differently.
Yeesh!
Cliffhanger!
Sociopath!
And on that note, on that huge mic drop, we're out, whatever, oh my god. Should we take a break?
Yes. We need a moment. Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode. So yikes! Yikes
oh
at
my gosh.
Owen being a sociopath!
What a clever little 11-year-old.
Yeah. Geez.
This is why you can't trust children. You just can't trust them.
No.
Yikes. The sweeter the look, the worse they are, the more you should be wary of them.
Yeah. Yikes.
So, standout moments.
You know, we have whittled the summary down quite a bit, so the story was very enjoyable. But yikes, there were so many red herrings. And that is a standout moment for me, and it is not a good one. It was just so many, just fish all over the place. Red herring, 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 every single thing. It got to be too much for me.
I will add to that, and I agree, two things. It got to the point where the red herrings were becoming too obvious.
Yes, like, oh, here's some other bit of random information that I can already tell doesn't have any bearing on anything whatsoever.
Yeah, because it gets to a certain point, you start to fix pieces together, and you're able to dismiss the red herrings.
Yeah.
And the other one is, because there were so many red herrings thrown in there, quite needlessly at points, it made the book longer than it needed to be, and I was starting to get a little impatient with it.
Yeah.
It could have easily been cut down by 100 pages, kept the story nice and tight, had all of the salient points in.
A few red herrings.
The twists.
One or two.
Well, you need a few red herrings. You do. You desperately need a few red herrings, but you could have cut it down. And to be fair, there was a lot of world building, just like unnecessary fluff thrown into the story.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to know about, and it was nice and all, and I think if it was like a TV show or something, having those little tidbits and pieces would have made the characters more visible and a bit more approachable on screen, but in a book it wasn't needed.
Yeah.
So I struggled a little bit with the pacing. Like, I just needed it to pick up a little bit more. I needed to go a bit quicker. It took longer than I wanted to read the book.
Yeah. I was puzzled about a couple of things. Like, I thought, you know, some of the red herrings and things, like, could have led to a different place. They could have gone in a different direction, and it would have made the story maybe better. When Maeve begins to think her leukemia is coming back, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then she finds out, oh, no, you don't have leukemia. It's just your iron. I feel like that's a missed opportunity. Someone could have been trying to poison Maeve or something like that. That's where I thought it was going with her getting sick and the bruises appearing. I thought that so, and she's always at the cafe. I thought this is a perfect opportunity for someone to poison her and, you know, gotta kill somebody.
Yeah, there was, do you remember there was the waiter, Ahmed?
Yeah, there was that extra waiter who was only there a couple of times.
He was there two times, a named waiter, had like a walk-on piece because he did have lines, and then that's it. So, yeah, there is potential for that kind of thing to have happened. I didn't pick up on the poisoning. I like that way to go.
Yeah.
I just purely thought her leukemia coming back was going to be something else. And it wasn't going to be. It was the biggest red herring of trying to distract you from the storyline.
Yeah. Or it could have even been that, yeah, her leukemia does come back. And so she is a piece, the one who solves the puzzle, taken out. So then everyone else has to scramble to try to put everything together. That also would have been a good turn, because Maeve is a super hacker and super smart and can figure all this stuff out. Well, get her out of the picture and someone else has to step in to solve the puzzle, and it's a different story.
Yeah.
But again, nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like that Maeve is a hacker. I didn't care for it in the last book either.
My issue is with people being hackers. Is that it's always applied to the person who doesn't have friends, who is socially awkward. And they're always like, the good with computers, they're not hackers.
Yeah.
It might just be my understanding of the term hackers, but for me, a hacker is somebody who gets themselves into places that shouldn't be, and doing stuff that shouldn't be doing in that. In the first one, she got into somebody's Google Drive because they left themselves logged in. That's not hacking. That's just
a happy accident.
A happy coincidence. Happy accident.
But she also, and in the first
finding,
one, she also got into all of Simon's old files, which was hackery. And was important.
It was, but she kind of got, mostly just worked out the passwords. Which again is hackery. For me, it's like going the back route, it's going down the line of code. I don't know, it just feels more technical to me. You know, you should be breaking into the NSA or NRA or MI5, or I don't know, all these people's documentation and being like, haha, look at me, I can do this. And then the government's like, oh, you can't, do you want a job? I don't know, I don't like the stereotype lone person such as Maeve being a hacker when they're not really a hacker, and it just might be my own misunderstanding, but it annoys me a little bit. Hacking isn't just guessing someone's password.
Do you know something that I did like, since we were both just talking about all the stuff that we don't really care for? Do you know what I did like? Because yes. I did like something. I liked Maeve and Louise.
Yes. 100% ship them. I'm so glad she face mauled them.
Yeah, me too.
A couple of times. I'd face maul someone who's gonna give me a nice meal.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I found it very shocking that there was a bomb. I don't know if like this should go in the surprises, because I don't know, it's kind of, it's really intense compared to the last one, which was all about rumors and stories coming out and truths being revealed and, oh yeah, this guy killed himself.
Yeah,
but this one is like, whoa, bomb? Yikes.
I kind of like the fact that they used a bomb and it took a different turn, because I didn't want it to be a repeat of One of Us is Lying. They've talked about, the sequels to a murder mystery happening before. When we talked about Good Girl's Guide to Murder and Good Girl, Bad Blood, and we didn't quite gel with Good Girl, Bad Blood because it's highly repetitive of the first one.
Yeah, I was thinking about this before we started recording. I kind of wanted to make a note for myself to remember to say, don't really care about mysteries with sequels. It should just be one thing. But then I thought of Truly Devious, and I really liked Truly Devious.
You see, for me,
So.
Truly Devious wasn't necessarily three, soon to be four books. It's one big story in multiple parts. So it felt different.
Yeah, but there was still
Oh yeah.
stuff.
Oh yeah. But the thing is with the Truly Devious series, from the outset, the whodunit and the why. It's the how you got there. That's the true mystery. And the friends we made along the way. Well, obviously with this series and with The Good Girl's Guide, it is a full whodunit. But I like the fact this one was totally different. I liked it because I didn't want that repetition again.
I mentioned this briefly earlier, but I feel like in this case, maybe this should have been a completely different story, and maybe Maeve didn't need her own book.
You said earlier that Maeve would have been deserving of a short story, and I agree with that. I would have liked it if it was maybe another year or two later with a completely different set of characters. You can have the Bayview Four and even Maeve and them floating in the background, but very much the background. Cooper's not there, but they are watching him on TV.
Yeah, I think that would have made the story a little bit better instead of trying to connect it to the last one.
Yeah, because I think that's, you're right, because it is connected to the first one, and it's trying to see, well, how is it connected? And really, it's just connected because Simon was a gossip monger and they used his very basic formula.
And if this were a different story altogether, I think I might have liked it a little bit more.
The first one for me was a solid 5 out of 5. This is a solid 4 out of 5. I really did enjoy it. I did like it for the fact that, we have listed a few potential issues, but ultimately it is a good story. It has some good twists, a few surprises. It is tonally different. Louise's biceps alone are worthy of a star.
They are. And that he's good in the kitchen.
Yeah, and Knox just needs a hug and is delightful in all ways, shapes, or form. So yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I'm struggling with this one. Thinking of things that particular, I like a lot of quippy lines that were in it. I like the revisiting of the Bayview Four, but like we said, it could have been completely, new characters and everything. Didn't particularly like the red herrings being too obvious and too plentiful. I liked the relationship building. It was different again. It centered a bit too much on Maeve. I think I would have liked a little bit of Phoebe, but when we were with Phoebe, it was constantly always relating back to her dad, and it was key. Her dad's death is key, but it was always there. And I know everybody has separate and different grieving processes, but I needed it to be about Phoebe and not about her dad a little bit. And I don't mean to sound callous about that, but I wanted to know a bit more about Phoebe. I like the fact as well that Phoebe isn't ashamed of being physical
No, I
in
really liked that. I
relationships.
also liked that she didn't, like, she was upset that she's called a slut and Knox is made fun of. Like, I like her anger at the gender stereotypes.
Yes. She's, I kind of think she's supposed to be the Addie of the piece, but she's a very poor Addie.
She's just Addie, not there yet.
She's not. She needs a little bit more. But then, saying that, I do not need a third book.
No. No. I would read a Phoebe short story.
Oh, yeah. I'll read in tie-ins, but I don't need a third book afterwards.
Luckily, I don't think there's going to be one.
No.
Do you know what? I feel really bad for Knox.
Yeah.
Because, and we briefly mentioned this, Maeve's secret was not Maeve's secret. That was definitely Knox's secret. And also, it was not even a thing. Yeah, they don't like each other like that. So, of course, he's not going to have any in-pants action. Because he doesn't like her like that. It's not that his penis is broken. His penis is disinterested.
You're allowed, as a man, not to get an erection over someone.
Yeah. Do you think that... Do you think that since, at this point, it's Owen, he's like, oh, it's a penis joke. Oh, let's talk about penises. I'm 12. I'm 11 years old. Let's talk about penises. I bet that's what it was. And he's drawing dick pics all over the place. And I bet that's what it was.
I don't know.
Although, like, I don't know why he would have had anything against Knox. Is it just...
Yeah, that doesn't make sense because I'm trying to remember at what point Owen wants to actually hang around with Knox and play video games with Knox. And he's obviously, like, Owen's a little sociopath because he can do this and still look people in the eye.
Yeah.
And still have these relationships and then still play for hours on end video games and still be that little boy that with the smile going, look, I can do spelling.
Yeah, he's a monster.
I'll tell you what I wouldn't mind as a sequel. 10 years in the future and it centres on Owen.
Yeah, that could be something. What's he up to now that his sisters didn't turn him in?
Yeah.
Is he better or is he worse?
Oh. Also, what the hell with bring your kid to school days? And at a construction site? No. No. There are major health and safety rules about that.
You know, I got to go to bring your child to work day with my dad a long time ago. And he worked at Maybelline. And it was the coolest thing ever. So I get it. I mean, that was a big factory, too. And, like, we got to go and see all the makeup and stuff being made. Super awesome. Giant machinery everywhere. But you know what? Nobody fucked with any of it.
I was going to say, did you play with the giant machinery? And did you crush anybody with a big slab of granite?
No.
No.
No, I did not. But it was really cool. And it's a cool learning experience. So I'm not going to shoot down bring your child to work day.
I will because it's stupid when it's a construction site. When there's major health and safety risks like that, it's ridiculous. He is not old enough. He's not responsible enough. He doesn't understand. He should not have been on that construction site as a 13-year-old child. No.
I argue that he should be responsible enough as a 13-year-old child to know better than to get on equipment, but he's stupid and an asshole. May he rest in peace.
Is.
And I don't like him.
He says.
Wah, wah.
Oh, Brandon's dead. I'm so upset.
Oh. Yeah.
It might just be that we do not do bring your kid to school, their work day. It's no. Even when I did work experience at where my mum worked for a week, the amount of forms I had to be filled in because a miner was going to be present on site, and it was a freaking office, never mind heavy machinery. And I was 16 at the time. It just baffles me. Yeah. It just baffles me. But that's, do you know the one thing that kept standing out to me all the way through the book?
What?
And it's got absolutely nothing to do with the story.
What?
Maeve being able to sit in a cafe.
Are you jealous of Maeve?
I'm just jealous of being able to sit in a cafe and drink coffee and just, you know, mess around on your computer or read a book. Or I'm at that point in this bloody pandemic where little things like that are starting to like seriously upset me. And reading this book and the amount of time she spent in that cafe, I just seriously pined all the way through. But yeah, I want that. I want the coffee. You don't appreciate it, me. You're not in COVID times, but still you're not appreciating it.
Shit.
And when when they're staking out David Jackson's house in the mingy coffee shop, and they're like, the bakery goods that have been there probably for a week, and the guy doesn't give a crap about them, the barista. I was like, I'll take that. It's fine.
Even go to a shitty cafe. I just want to get out of my house.
Yes.
Oh. Why was she always at that cafe? She was always there. She lived there.
Didn't like being home.
But why?
She needed to stop paying rent.
Her home life was not terrible. She had a good home life. Just, why wouldn't you want to be at home sometimes? She was always there and never, hardly ever eating any of the delicious food. What's wrong with her? Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Without Bronwyn, I can understand her being lonely at home because her parents are busy, you know, they probably work late.
Yeah. Who's your favourite character?
Luis. The all of the Santos family.
Yeah.
You can imagine Manny being this, like, cuddly bear, slightly dumb, but would do anything for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I like all of them too. I also like Knox.
Yes, me too.
I like Knox quite a bit. Broken penis and all.
I'm glad he got the girl at the end.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm proud of him that, you know, they're up on the roof and he's terrified of heights, but he goes to the edge and he's there for Phoebe. And then she sobs while eating cake. And then they make out and he's like, whoa, should you be doing this right now? You kind of got a lot of shit happening. And she was like, oh, no, thinking, oh, it's terrible. He doesn't want to be with me at all. And he's like, no, I just mean like a day or two, you know, give you a couple days to process it. And then we can start making out. And then you can see my functioning penis. But I'm glad that he didn't just like take advantage of her, because she doesn't need someone to take advantage of her again.
No.
But I'm glad that happened.
Knox is,
he's a good guy.
Very sensible. And I feel a little bit, like, sorry for him with his parents because, you know, he has four older sisters and what the next one is, what, 10 years older than him?
Yeah, they're all quite a bit older.
Yeah, because, the eldest is about 30 and then I think there's about a 10-year difference between him and the youngest. And they just treat him like baby. And I can see that because, you know, there's a bit of a difference, and I get that. But he doesn't have any relationship with his parents by all appearance. Like, his mom's his mom, but his mom's distant, and he craves his dad's attention desperately.
Yeah, but he's...
Anyway.
He's not like a guy's guy.
Yeah, and he just doesn't have any... He doesn't relate to his dad, and it's like... It's a little sad, but it's at the same time, it's like, Knox is not a bad kid. You know, he's probably got decent grades.
Mm-hmm.
His attendance is 100% until that time he skipped, mm-hmm. when Phoebe teaches him how to just skip out of school. That was hilarious. You know, it's like, he just wants some mild approval.
Yeah. A slight bit of attention. Just a little
Yeah,
bit.
Just, even just acknowledgement.
Yeah.
How was your day, son? It goes a long way.
Yeah. Do you know what I like about them skipping school? It's that they skipped their health class, and they skipped their health class because they were talking about the male reproductive system. And poor Knox. That would have been a shitty class for him that day.
Oh.
That would have been bad.
You just can't imagine it. I feel sorry as well while when Sean's like, my man, high five. And it's like, dude, you're an asshole. Just stop. Go away.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me.
No, you punched me in the face. That's not cool. It does not make me like you.
Jules at the end said that Sean's got a lot of toxic role models, which has kind of moulded him into the person he is, but he is trying to change. Which I'm glad. I'm glad that that kind of self-realisation's taken place. He knows he needs to change. He's done bad. But at the same time, Jules is a bitch.
Yeah, Jules is a terrible friend.
And I can't understand how a terrible person can make another terrible person better. Doesn't seem to make logical sense in my brain.
Maybe Jules, being a terrible person, sees that Sean is a terrible person. So that makes her want to be less of a terrible person. And then Sean sees that Jules is trying to be less of a terrible person. So then he, in turn, also tries to be less of a terrible person.
We can only hope.
Did any of that actually make sense?
It did.
Oh, good. Okay.
Scarily enough.
Good. Okay. So let's hope that that's what's happening.
Yeah. Say it is. Yeah. What about you? Who's your favorite characters?
Knox and Louise. I think I talked about this already. We've talked about so many things.
I'm just establishing it.
Just making sure that we say the actual words.
Yes.
My name is Amanda, and my favorite character is Knox. I don't know why I said it like that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Can we give a special shout out to Nonny?
We can. We can, especially because she's trash-talking people at the baseball game.
And Chris is having to help her stand up every time she wants to give a standing ovation to Cooper.
Yeah.
I bet she's got such a potty mouth.
Oh, she probably does. Bless her sweet Nonny. We love Nonny.
Yes. I just adore Nonny. Yeah. I'm so glad that she had that little brief golden gem of an appearance. Yeah.
It was like Stan when the actual lizard showed up. You're like, yay, yes! Actual lizard. Yay, Nonny.
It's like, oh, thank God they're both still alive.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yikes.
I'm glad, can I just point out as well, I'm glad Nate got out of his dad's house.
Yes.
I'm glad his mum stuck around.
Yes.
I'm feel a little bit for his mum being stuck in the house with the dad who's still going through a lot of problems. It can't be a nice place for her.
No, it's probably not. But at least he's going to rehab and trying to get better.
And she is better and, staying on path, staying on track, and she's helping him.
Yeah.
And, a year and a bit later, and it's good to see that. But I'm very pleased that Nate is out of our house. And he's kind of moved into, a frat house, basically. I did like the guy's like, Nate. Hypothetically, if I was to go run naked through the neighborhood, would you join me? No.
No, get out.
No, you should leave.
Yeah. Okay. That was pretty good. Were you surprised by anything? Well, we kind of already talked about it a little bit, but as we established moments ago, we have to say the actual words in this episode for whatever reason.
I was surprised by things.
Amanda was also surprised by things.
Excellent. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Seriously, though.
I was surprised by the number of red herrings. Ugh. I, Claire, was surprised by the number of red herrings. I, Claire, was surprised. No one took a freaking picture of Intense Guy.
Yeah.
If.
Until it was bomb time.
until it was bomb time. If I was sitting in a cafe and some weird, intense looking dude was coming in and asking for my friend who wasn't working there, and then we have to get the deliciously brawny Luis and Manny out to chase him off, I would be like, mobile phone out, take a picture, you're Phoebs.
Do you
Do you
notice?
know this person because they were asking after you?
Yeah, but do you know what? We have already established that this crew, none of them are Gen Z. So they don't even
Oh,
have their
the rubbish!
they don't have their phones out. They're not
They're
interested yet.
absolutely
Yeah.
rubbish, Gen Zs. I mean, I know I'm a terrible millennial because I don't like avocados,
Yeah, me
but
too.
I'd still take a picture and go, Amanda, do you know this guy? Because he was acting a bit weird at the cafe. Can you be careful?
Yeah, I would do the same for you. I, Amanda, would do the same for you, Claire.
I, Claire, would do that to you, for you, Amanda.
Thank
And
you.
then, arrange, make sure you're like getting home safe, buy an alarm or something.
Yeah.
If a weirdo came to the workplace,
Yeah.
I just know it'd rang some bells.
Yeah, it's not good.
What did you, Amanda, find surprising?
I, Amanda, Claire, found it surprising that Owen is a
Yes.
sociopath.
Hi, Claire. I'm too surprised that Owen is a little sociopath.
You know, there's something though that I didn't follow with that because, we know that it's Owen because LOL, him is spelled bizarre. But and then Phoebe's like, oh yeah, I must not have gotten to him about that bizarre yet. But that bizarre happened in one sitting at the table. Unless he had been studying his spelling words separately or something, I'm not sure, but that whole bizarre situation happened in one sitting. She's like, okay, now spell bizarre, and he spells it wrong. And she's like, no, that's not the correct bizarre. This is the bizarre that you're looking for. So I don't quite get that he misspelled the word, and she was like, oh yeah, it's because I hadn't I know that it's him because we had this issue and I didn't teach him how to spell it yet. But you did. You did. So that bothered me.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't know how happy I am with the ending.
I was not happy with the ending at all. I hated it. Sorry.
No, please express your feelings, Amanda.
Thank you, Claire. I hated the ending. I hated it so much. It was just like it reminded me of Good Girl, Bad Blood
Yeah.
in the very last pages. Here's another bit of information, and guess what? It's a really big twist. Didn't like it. Didn't care for that at all.
Yeah, 'cause we established in those discussions, which everybody should check out, that if you're going to do a murder mystery, you have to drop the Tibbets all the way through. And there were little snippets with Owen, but Owen was the type of character who, if it was a sitcom, he'd open the door, say a witty comeback or, some meaningful line, and then close the door again. And that was Owen.
Yeah, it just nothing with Owen made sense. Like we talked about earlier, why would he mention Knox's penis unless it's just because it's penises? Why? Why would he do that? It doesn't make any sense. Knox was nothing but nice to him. So,
How would Owen have even known
well, they made.
who Maeve is? So if it, because considering when Maeve and Nox had their relationship was about a year ago. So around about a year ago, Maeve would have had that conversation with Bronwyn in the cafe, because they frequented together. Owen wouldn't have known who Phoebe was. Sorry, who Maeve was at that point.
No. It just doesn't.
So that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. He was thrown in at the end just for a twist.
I was convinced it was Phoebe. I didn't trust Emma at all, one bit. I knew she was involved from way early in the book.
Me too.
I was convinced that Phoebe was going to be involved in some way, shape or form, because I thought for me that would have been the twist, where actually one of the narrators of the piece is guilty.
Yeah, that would have been good. Or it would have also been good if Emma was having this conversation with the unknown person on the internet, but then the unknown person on the internet was her sister, and they're having this conversation and planning all this stuff together, but not. That would have been good.
I thought that was actually a potential. That was one of the thoughts I had at some point in my reading.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah, I never went down the Owen route. There was too many signs of they talked about their dad and how much they missed him and the changes and the ruptures and what it's done to the family. It was too in your face obvious that it was to do with that.
Yeah, it was way too much.
Yeah.
So you know that that's the important thing.
Then it's building it around there.
Yeah.
And the D'Agostino case that Eli's dealing with, there were some pointed comments about if they've got a pretty face. White dudes, pretty face, they always get the sympathetic photograph in the news media, and if it's a person of colour or who's in any way, shape or form different to the white male pretty boy face, it's always a mugshot.
Yeah.
And that was very on the nose kind of in your face clue thing. And then even like the typography conversation with Sandeep in Until Proven.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, yeah, I don't know. There was so much as I was reading through, and I'm thinking, I need to remember this. More so than in the first one. In the first one, there was a lot of information given that I wasn't sure if I did need it or not. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this one, I was like, I need to know about this bazaar. I need to know about this typography.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Is it time?
It's time. It's definitely time.
Okay. Woo! Woo! Would you rather?
Yeah! Amanda, it's time.
Claire, I believe that it is time.
I, Claire, acknowledge Amanda saying it is time.
I, Amanda, acknowledge that Claire is saying to Amanda that it is time.
Oh, dear me. Okay. We asked on social media the most obvious question from this book. Choose truth or dare. Ooh. So on Facebook, 67% said truth, and 33% said dare. On Instagram, 65% said truth and 35% said dare. And on Twitter, straight 50-50.
Not really.
We have some lovely comments. Would you like to kick us off?
I would love to kick us off. Don Kurtigich, my hero, on Instagram said, dare. You know if someone is brave or foolish from a dare, but not much more. Scorpio heart likes her secrets. And that is true. As I am also a Scorpio.
Just gonna sting ya. Nancy Theatre on Instagram said, truth, because I can lie and no one would know.
Ooh, clever, Nancy Theatre. I like that. R. Skedge on Instagram said, truth, because what do I have to hide? R. Skedge is clearly a better human being than anyone else.
Scorpios, by the sound of it.
It's true. It's probably
Mr. Jitters on Instagram said, dare, because I'm very good at reading people and knowing what to make them do for the type of situation I want to create. Lol.
Good job, Mr. Jitters. I love Mr. Jitters. Bree Tart on Instagram said truth because I'm a coward who doesn't keep secrets. Honesty.
Colin on Facebook said, I try to be pretty truthful all the time anyway, so going for truth. Plus, I don't have any deep dark secrets to be revealed. Honest? Nope. Open book right here.
I don't know if I believe that. Coral on Facebook said, I'm with Colin. I really don't have any deep, dark secrets that will be held against me, so truth all the way. Bring it on.
Coral is without fear.
Yes, she is.
Constance on Facebook said, I dare you to get me a pizza. I'm with Constance.
You know, I really, like, I was this close to sending Constance a pizza.
Nice.
Should have done. I should have. It'll be a surprise pizza whenever it happens. Annie on Facebook said, I just finished Lucy Foley's The Hunting Season a while back. Dares can go horribly wrong. I haven't read that book, but if it's about horrible dares, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, look what happened to Brandon, but, you know, it's Maggie on Facebook said, dares seem like the safe bet in this game. The dares were pretty silly and harmless. The secrets they dug up and tried to reveal with the truth, brutal.
That is true. Although, The one dare was a murder.
Yeah, I mean, that's from one extreme to another.
Yeah.
Blow up chicken. Murder!
Yes. Blow up chicken. Make out with one of the Bayview Four. Die.
Murder. The murder.
Murder. Okay, so what do you pick?
I honestly don't think I have any deep dark secrets. I'm a very boring person. I'm more likely to tell you the deep dark secrets just for lols.
Or reveal someone else's deep dark secrets.
If somebody tells me a secret, I'm not going to reveal it because it's not cool. That's not cool.
I'm going to go with dare. I mean, if they're fun dares, if they're, you know.
I dare you to send me a pizza.
I will. I would do that. Like, every address of person that I have, I'm just going to just start sending out pizzas.
Isn't that kind of a stereotypical, like, high school thing, though, where you send, like, 10 pizzas to somebody and they've got to pay on the door?
Yeah, but, like, you can't do that anymore. You gotta pay in advance.
Yeah.
Cash on delivery is not so much a thing anymore.
No. I mean, who has cash?
Whatever. Okay, next question. Would you rather spell bizarre or bazaar?
Sentence, please.
That's your sentence. Would you rather spell bizarre or bazaar? Bizarre or bazaar. See, I'm even saying them differently in my head.
Bizarre.
Bizarre.
Bazaar.
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 Bizarre bazaar.
Say it with a Russian accent.
Bizarre bazaar.
Nice.
Bizarre bazaar.
There's a lot more distinction in the pronunciation there. I like it.
Or how about this? Bizarre or bazaar. They're two different words, clearly. It's bizarre. Can we pronounce it bizarre from now on?
The bizarre.
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 It's bizarre. It is so bizarre.
Bizarre? I'm going to the bizarre, not the bizarre.
This is entirely too long for us to be saying these two words over and over and over again. Which one do you pick?
Bizarre.
I'm going to go with Bizarre. Next question.
Would you rather go to the park date or the kitchen date with Luis?
I like both of them.
Luis's date game is solid.
I go on park dates all the time. Got on a park date every day this week. I like park dates. Kitchen date would also be fun, especially because it's a professional kitchen.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Regardless of what happens while you're there, face mauling aside, like that would be a fun date. I think probably that's what I would go with. Kitchen date. Just for the fancy kitchen.
I would go with kitchen date too. Simply because it would be nice to see somebody actually who can, like, you know, professionally cook.
Yeah.
Like, work. It's not behind a screen. I can see it. And then I can smell it. And I can ask questions. And then there's the 5-minute wait for whatever needs to be done, which is always nice. Mm-hmm. And it's in a nice, enclosed, you know, you're by yourself. It'll be dark outside. Mm-hmm. It's building.
Yeah.
But then the park date the next day.
Just do both of them. All dates.
Yeah, I'll do both of them.
I will accept all dates with Luis.
All dates will happen, but we'll take the kitchen date on the night, and then the next day, after the kitchen date, you'll be like, so, park tonight? Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And then after the park, on the afternoon, you've gone for coffee.
Yes. But while you're at the park, you go and sit in your car and make out for a few minutes.
Yes, and find that you can actually recline the seat all the way back quite easily.
Yes. Okay, good plan.
And your friend finds you, knocks on the window, do a jaunty, cheery wave. And you're like, yeah, it's happening. She's like, yes, at last. Thumbs up.
That would be really good. I mean, awkward. Yeah. Terribly awkward, but...
But not if it's this situation, because that person's like... fully supportive of your actions, yeah. And she's knocking on the window to stop you from having an embarrassing situation.
Yes. Phoebe's a good friend.
Yes.
Speaking of Phoebe, would you rather be Phoebe living with her truth, or I'm going to say Knox, because it was really Knox that was ruined in this game, or Knox living with his truth? Think about being at school and all of that, not just personally, like everything that goes along with it.
Probably Phoebe. This is hard, actually, because...
Is it hard? Is it hard?
It depends who you're smooching.
Penis joke.
This is... This is a difficult one because they both had really shit times.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
I don't like the way Sean and Brandon and Monica slut-shamed Phoebe. She shouldn't have, it was horrible. But I feel like Knox probably had more abuse.
Yeah.
Everywhere, like the posters and the noodles and other paraphernalia spread everywhere.
Yeah.
I think people will move on from Phoebe's truth sooner than would move on from Knox's. So Phoebe.
I'm going to go with Knox. Just because he is a white male and everything will eventually go his way. So, just think in a terrible world where this would never happen. But, Knox could just send out a dick pic, clear his name immediately. Terrible. He would never do that. But still.
No, he wouldn't. Well, that's it.
Show off your erect penis, Knox, and no one will bother you.
As long as... as yikes. Long as long. That's all I want to say. As long as long. Because that could have the exact opposite effect. See, what Knox needs is somebody to turn around and go, whoa, Nelly, that was fun. But the problem is, the person who he wants and the person who wants to be with him is Phoebe, and she's suffering the opposite.
Yeah.
So, you know, the person who's currently being slut-shamed unnecessarily by the school turns around and goes, well, actually, you know, there's a lot down there and he knows how to use it.
That would just make it a thousand times worse.
For her, it'll make it fine for him, but then eventually... but it'll be like, oh, you know, he'll probably end up with STD jokes at that probably. Point because he slept with Phoebe, he's had multiple partners.
Probably.
It's not an easy situation.
It's not. It's not.
Okay.
But I feel like people will always judge Phoebe more. And this goes back to the gender stereotypes that we talked briefly about earlier. Like, I feel like it will always be worse for Phoebe.
Completely. So, completely agree.
So I'll pick Knox.
Okay. I'm going to stick with Phoebe. As much as you've made a very persuasive argument, I'm going to stick with Phoebe.
Okay.
Phoebe's going to leave that little shithole town anyway.
She really is. She's going to go on and do great things.
Good. Next question.
Last question.
Woo! Would you rather turn in Sean, Jules and Monica, be naughty, naughty liars, or... 11-year-old sociopath Owen. I'm not trying to, in any way, shape, or form, push you in any direction.
I'm definitely turning in Owen. Because, yikes. No other explanation is needed. Yikes. Like, Sean, Jules, and Monica, yeah, they were trespassing. They were in a place where they shouldn't be, and something terrible happened. So, yeah, that's bad. But fucking Owen, yikes. I don't care that he's 11. Turn him in, get him the help that he needs, and maybe he won't be a murderer when he grows up. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed he's not a murderer. 10 years later, when we read his story, we'll find out. This is our fanfic that we're writing.
Yeah.
Is he a murderer? Wait and see.
What would he be charged with? Like, in this situation?
I don't know, because I don't know law terms. I don't work at Until Proven or Until Prosecuted. What did you call it earlier? There were so many terrible things that came out of your mouth that were not at all what they were supposed to be.
Proven guilty.
Proven guilty, that's what it is.
I had to think back there. Rewind. Aggravated assault. No.
Manslaughter, probably. Because, I mean, he's responsible.
He's not directly responsible for...
He's responsible for Brandon's death, but he did not perform Brandon's death.
Yes. And he's a minor.
Yeah, so he'd probably go into juvie for a while, get out when he's 18, and then be completely rehabilitated, right?
Wink. And his records will be sealed. Wink. This could happen. This could be part of our fanfic.
It really could be. And then Maeve comes back and dusts off her hacker skills and, like, reveals his record. Because that's what hackers do.
By putting in his password, which is 1, 2, 3, 4 exclamation point.
His password is password.
Password is ass.
Not
the S's
character.
Are fives.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good password. That's a good one. What are you doing?
Oh, man.
You've got to answer this question too, Claire.
I mean,
you, Claire,
dang,
have to answer
Amanda.
This question too. What is happening?
I don't know. Okay, I mean, Sean, Jules, and Monica lied. The dicks, the assholes, but they lied. And Sean, technically assaulted Knox.
And face punched him for safety
Exactly.
reasons. Safety punch.
Safety punch. But Owen is a little murderer, wannabe murderer,
Manslaughterer.
manslaughterer, slaughterer of man. So it's got to be Owen. I mean, it's got to be. Plus, we've got fan fiction right here.
Yeah.
We've already started.
Okay, cool. Good. Great.
But then there's part of us that really wants to see what he can do.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's real, he's fiction. So, if he's going to murder people, they're not real people. But he's got to go down. I'm calling the po-po, got the clink.
Good. Favorite final thought quote?
You whimpered
No one knows that I
that.
was just sitting there shaking my head for a very, very, very long time. You can probably tell from the way I said favorite final thought quote, but this is why everyone needs to join our Patreon bonus tier. So you can see all of the terrible shit that happens in the background. Because there's a lot of it.
Much. I mean, what, we're on hour six?
At least.
Favorite final thought quote. I've got a few.
Me too.
So I've got three.
Okay. Me too. Me three? I'm sorry.
I, Claire, have three final favorite thought thingies. I don't know anymore. God. It's been a long week. Okay, I've got three. Two a bit more for fun. I'll do those first.
Okay.
Parents are the single worst threat to any type of cybersecurity.
An 11-year-old, apparently, too.
Apparently.
And Maeve.
Second one. Fake fruit flavouring is not and never will be a vegetable.
Wonderful.
I think when I read that one, I went bazinga and then quickly wrote it down. And the last one mistake shouldn't condemn anyone to a future filled with Brandon Webbers. Please replace name with appropriate person of your choice. Ugh.
Okay.
What about yours?
I also have three. I, Amanda, also have three favorite final thought quotes. Two of them are for fun. One is less for fun. What's the opposite of ridiculously buff? Pathetically spindly?
Oh,
I
Knox.
like it. I kind of want pathetically spindly on a shirt. I just like spindly. It's a good word.
Spindly's a
It's a
wonderful
very good
word.
word.
Spindly.
Also, speaking of Knox, even though this wasn't Knox, but it happened with Knox in the general vicinity, it's not nerdy to care about fonts.
Adore that quote.
Me too. I love it so much because I have a passion for fonts. I
I felt
enjoy them.
so seen at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did. I loved it.
What's your favourite font?
That's a tough question. It changes day to day.
Yeah. I'm currently using Calibri Light, size tw 12
Yeah.
for emphasis,
Yeah.
11 for main text.
Yeah. What's your least favorite font? That's probably an easier question to answer.
Copper plate.
You know what's
It's
worse?
just
You know what's worse than copperplate? Papyrus. Ugh.
it's just like it's not any event. It's just
Ooh. You know what else? Comic Sans.
I don't like Comic Sans. But I understand there's a time and a place for Comic
Oh, there's
Sans.
so
There is
many.
never a time and a place for
No, there's
Papyrus.
not. But there's so many better comic style fonts, if that's what you're looking for.
I quite like the spooky ones and the Joker Man ones that are a bit more like gimmicky,
Yeah. Ooh, I have
but
a.
just for fun, just for fun.
Right. I have one that I really, really like, and you can find it on defont.com. It's called Tuna and Hot Dogs on Rye. It's a delightful little doodly font. Love it.
Ooh,
I love
ooh!
it.
I will have to check that one
Not
out.
like for actual usage anywhere, just like to look at.
No.
I like it.
Yeah, but you know when you type in something and then you're just like, oh, I'm sick of looking at it, so you just change the font for funsies.
Okay,
Next one.
the one that's actually real. Love and hope and beauty still exist, even when things seem impossibly dark.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I've noticed our courts are either by Knox or within, a Knox adjacent
Yes, because Knox
predominantly.
is the best.
He
And
is.
Louise.
He had some of the shortest chapters, but they were nice and tight. And, the court heavy,
Yeah.
you know?
He made a big impact.
Yeah. He did, he did. He can be the one who solves the Owen murders.
Yeah. Or it could have all been put onto Knox's shoulders when Maeve is in the hospital with leukemia. I would have liked that story 100,000 times better. Not that I didn't just hate this one, but if it was all Knox all the time, I would have enjoyed it.
Do you think we're too heavily comparing it to the first one, in like unconsciously? Because the first one was brilliant.
Maybe.
Or is it's suffering being a sequel?
Yeah. See, if
If it
it, like I
wasn't.
said earlier, if it was a book that was its own thing that didn't have anything to do, like just change all of their names so they're not the same characters, then this story would have
Change the
been,
high school even.
yeah, this would have, it
Yeah.
would have been completely different. And I might have liked it more.
Yeah, but still high rated. Like I've still rated it 4 out of 5 on Goodreads, and
Same.
to get a 4 or a 5 out of me on Goodreads, you've still got to be a bloody good book. Okay, cool.
Okay, if you liked this, try this.
Yes.
Do you have anything to suggest?
I do. I was looking around a little bit. I was tempted to go and recommend ones we've already covered, murder mystery wise, but I've done that the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point I'm taking the
Yeah.
mick. So I thought I'll have a look to see if there's any other similar threads out there.
Okay.
So I haven't actually read this one, but it seemed quite interesting, and a lot of places said it was good. It's a solid 3, 4 out of 5 star rated book. And it's called Heartstream by Tom Pollock. So the summary, which I took from Goodreads, is I just wanted to see you before the end. A taut psychological thriller about obsession, fame, and betrayal for fans of Black Mirror. Kat is in love, always the sensible one. She can't believe that she's actually dating, not to mention dating a star. But the fandom can't know. They would eat her alive, and first at the buffet would definitely be her best friend, Evie. Amy uses Heartstream, a social media app that allows others to feel your emotions. She broadcasted every moment of her mother's degenerative illness and her grief following her death. It's the realest, rawest reality TV imaginable. But on the day of Amy's mother's funeral, Amy finds a strange woman in her kitchen. She's rigged herself and the house with explosives, and she's been waiting to talk to Amy for a long time. Who is she? A crazed fan? What does she want? Amy and Kat are about to discover how far true obsession can go.
Mine is called Three Truths and a Lie by Brent Hardinger. And I found this summary on Book Riot. A weekend retreat in the woods and an innocent game of three truths and a lie go horribly wrong in this high-octane psychological thriller. Deep in the forest, four friends gather for a weekend of fun. Truth number one. Rob is thrilled about the weekend trip. It's the perfect time for him to break out of his shell, to be the person he really, really wants to be. Truth number two, Liam, Rob's boyfriend, is nothing short of perfect. He's everything Rob could have wanted. They're perfect together. Perfect. Truth number three, Mia has been Liam's best friend for years, long before Rob came along. They get each other in a way Rob could never, will never understand. Truth number four, Galen, Mia's boyfriend, is sweet, handsome, and incredibly charming. He's the definition of a golden boy, even with the secrets up his sleeve. One of these truths is a lie, and not everyone will live to find out which one it is. So, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
You sure?
I think so.
Do you want it to be?
I, Amanda, declare that that is it for this episode of Fictional Hangover.
And I, Claire, acknowledge what Amanda has just told me and ending this show.
Join us next time as we discuss Freak Show by James St. James and have a chat with a special guest, audiobook producer Elise Green. Look out for our Yay! Would You Rather polls on social media. I know, I love her so much. Look out for our Would You Rather polls on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover themed merchandise, and become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.